Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the PDS Multinational Q1 FY23 earnings conference call hosted by Edelweiss Securities Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Sandeep Kumar Agarwal from Edelweiss Securities Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Lizanne. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone, based on the geographies you are logging in. On behalf of Edelweiss Securities, I welcome you all to PDS Limited Q1 FY23 earnings call. We have with us today Mr. Palak Seth, Vice Chairman of PDS Multifashions. We have Mr. Sanjay Jain, Group CEO, and Mr. Ashish Gupta, Group CFO, and Ms. Reena Joseph, Head Corporate Finance, M&A, and Chief IR. Before I hand over the floor to Palak, I would like to highlight that the safe harbor statement on the second slide of the presentation is assumed to be read and understood. With this, Palak, over to you. Thank you.
Sanjay, you will be giving the presentation, right? Opening speech.
Yes, Sanjay can also start, if Sanjay wants to start.
Yeah. Please. Very warm greetings to all of you who have joined us on this call today, and a very warm welcome to our Q1 financial year 2023 earnings call. The Q1 investor update and the financial results are available on the company website and the stock exchanges. I would just like to draw your attention to the disclaimer that the discussions today may have forward-looking statements subject to certain risks, uncertainty, other factors that could cause actual results to differ from those contemplated by the relevant forward-looking statements. We are pleased to share that we have kick-started the first quarter of the financial year with robust growth of 44%, reporting a top line of 2,340 crores. This was accompanied by a gross margin of 15.9%, and if we compare it sequentially with the previous fourth quarter of last year, it is actually a 78 basis point improvement. We reported an EBITDA of 73 crores during this quarter, which has translated into a growth of 113% over the same quarter last year. The EBITDA margin of the company increased by 102 basis point from 2.1% last year to 3.1% this year. This was driven by operating efficiencies, wherein the employee expense declined from 8.3% of top line in Q1 to 7.5% this year, and other expenses declining from 6.9% of top line last year to 5.2%. In the Q1 of FY22, which is the quarter of last year, the company also had reported a gain from sale of real estate asset in U.K., which led to a gain of 41 crore. If we adjust for this in the last year quarter so that we try and do a comparable operating profit to operating profit, then our EBIT reported 128% growth to 57 crores with 2.4% margins versus 1.5% margins this year. Apart from the real estate monetization that happened in the last quarter, there are also other two items which I would like to explain so that we facilitate you having a normalized PBT assessment. What has been reported on the whole is that in the Q1 last year, company made a 62 crore PBT, and in Q1 this year, company made a 47 crore PBT. There is, as I said, in the last year, 62, there's an element of 41 crore gain from sale of real estate asset. That is first point that need to be normalized. Last year, there was a 2 crore ESOP cost in the first quarter. This year, there is an ESOP cost of 7 crores in the first quarter. As you know, company has embarked on an ESOP plan, and we believe the entire senior management across all our functions and verticals that we wanted to incentivize have been taken care of. We do not anticipate any large or meaningful ESOP allocations to happen, barring the ones in the normal course of business. But basis the ESOPs allocated, there is a 7 crore charge this year versus 2 crore last year. Company has also been investing into new businesses, and we had a 6 crore investment in the new business in the first quarter last year, and this year we have doubled up to 12 crores in the first quarter. And as you know, in our business, unlike any other company, the new ventures or new investments are on balance sheet, but in our case they are expense from the P&L. So if you allow me to adjust for the real estate gain, if you allow me to normalize for the ESOP cost and the loss on new business investments, then the normalized PBT of the company was 29 crore last year, and the normalized PBT of company is 66 crore this year. So from a 1.8% PBT margin, we have moved to 2.8% PBT margin, and the normalized PBT has actually multiplied 2.3 times from 29 to 66 crores. That was for our results on the whole. Now, if you allow me to get into the specific segments, our sourcing segment, which accounts for 95% of our top line, clocked in 42% growth compared to the same quarter last year, and we achieved a top line of 2,216 crore. Our sourcing business reported an EBIT of 60 crores with a 59% growth as compared to the quarter one of last year, and an ROCE of 42%. In the third quarter of FY22, friends, when we got to communicate with our investor through our investor release, we had mentioned about PDS has onboarded new business teams with the potential to generate 300 million in sales and 4% PBT margin in 3 years from that time frame. That was our new investment into the, as part of the sourcing business. In the 3 year journey, FY23 was our first year, and we have set ourselves a target that we would get to 30% of the 300 million in the year one. And we are pleased to share that our new vertical reported top line growth of 6 times. They were at 23 crore in quarter one last year, and they are at 141 crore in quarter one of this year. So we are, basis the quarter one achievement and the visibility that we have in the coming few quarters, we believe we are on track to meet 30% of the goal that we had set for ourselves in terms of contribution from new businesses. Further, PBT losses attributable to the segment, which is the investment in new verticals, they were at 27% of the top line in the first quarter of last year. When I say 27% of the new business top line, and as the sales are increasing, the losses stroke investment in the new vertical is now 8.6% of the top line. So this trend of 27% to 8.6% is also a trend towards gradually we getting into a break-even situation from our new vertical investment, and then it start meaningfully contributing to our aspiration of deriving 4% PBT in 3 years. Now moving on to our manufacturing segment. This segment reported a growth of 78% with a top line of 169 crore in quarter one this year as compared to 95 crore in quarter one last year. The segment turned profitable in Q4 of last year and continues its profitable journey with a reported PAT margin of 1.6% in the current quarter. We believe now the manufacturing business will contribute to company's overall return profile. Given our order book in hand, given our engagement with the customers, we feel positive that the business would continue to make money for all the quarters to come. From a geographical footprint perspective, our US business has been continuing on a growth trajectory, and it constituted about 18% of the top line in the current quarter as compared to 11% last year. During this quarter, we had a net debt of about 77 crore in the quarter one, wherein the net working capital days were at 3 days. For the same period on June 21 last year, the working capital days were 2 days, the slight increase of 1 day. This is a seasonal business, as you know. The 1 day increase from 2 days to 3 days is mainly on account of, on one hand, we have growth of 44%. We have also been trying to avail as much of, a possibility of offering early payment discounts to our vendors. And therefore, while this the benefit goes to our gross margin, but there is an increased finance cost. And this quarter end also coincided with Eid holidays in the first week of July. And whenever there is an Eid, as I said, seasonality of the business, it lead to an accelerated payout to vendors as well. So these are some of the reasons company would continue to remain focused, barring the seasonality of the quarters, continue to remain focused at operating at nil or negative working capital. The company, because of the operating performance that I just summarized for you, delivered a 30% return on capital employed versus 26% in quarter one of last year. When I'm saying 26%, this is normalized from the core operations. So as compared to core operations, there's a 4% increase in return on capital employed. And the return on equity of the company is 28% in first quarter this year versus 22% from the normalized earnings of last year first quarter. We have been, while we our efforts led to monetization of a real estate asset in first quarter of last year, company believes there is potential for further monetization of one or two assets, in the ensuing near future. Our efforts are continuing while this is non-operational, non-recurring, but as part of our balance sheet optimization, wherever there's an opportunity, we will continue to remain focused on that as well. And the financial position continues to be strong, providing a strong backbone for the company to grow. Our net debt to EBITDA stand at about 0.3. Now moving on to certain corporate actions, the shareholders of the company have approved a stock split in the ratio of 5 shares for every 1 equity share and a final dividend of ₹23.85 per share for the financial year ended March 31st, 2022 in the AGM of the company held on July 29, 2022. The record date of the stock split will be 29th of August, 2022. And we believe, basis the planning being done, the shares should tentatively get credited by the end of October 22, subject to required regulatory approvals. Lastly, there are various factors that have an impact on our business, from rising cost, inflation, increased freight costs, to macroeconomic and geopolitical factors impacting both developed market and also the developing markets. But we believe we have a robust platform, and we have been well poised to face these challenging times by continuously identifying opportunities that are around us in the ecosystem. We launched Sourcing as a Service, a customized and exclusive service offering, and have already gained good traction with marquee retailers being onboarded with long-term contracts. At present, the contracts that we have in hand and the active engagement that we have with our customers should enable us handle for these customers incremental revenue of about 8,000 crore while we are providing this as a service to our customers. So what we get to take in a P&L as a service charge, but as an important partner to our customers, besides the top line of the company, the normal course from design as a service, brands and manufacturing, this additional activity that we strategically added in our portfolio have already enabled the company, locked in or very close to about 8,000 crore of annual volume of business handling for our customers. And given our platform-based approach and agile business model, we would always be geared up to cater to the diversified need of our customers and hope to garner more traction with this new service offering. And while we believe in the short term, there are some, headwinds, but the commodity input prices, the freights have been kind of, softening a bit. And this quarter, in our journey that we had shared with you, our 4 to 5 year journey, wherein we aspired to be a 2.5 billion enterprise, 1.2 billion, we believe this quarter has been a stepping stone to our 4 to 5 year journey. And now our Vice Chairman, Mr. Palak Seth, and myself, along with our CFO and Reena, would be happy to take any questions you may have, please.
Thank you, Sanjay.
Should we open up for questions?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, please. Go ahead, please. Let's open up for question answers, please.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone wishing to ask a question may please press star in one on your touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is on the line of Chinmaya Bhargava from LSSB Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question. Am I audible?
Yes, please.
Yeah. So I have a few questions. The first is on our US expansion. It's very impressive seeing that it forms about 18% of our pie now, given that a few years ago it was in the low single digits. So I know we got specific people to spearhead our expansion here, but could you tell me more about what led to our success?
Sanjay, I can take this?
Yes, please, go ahead.
Yeah. So there's a big migration of US business out of China at this stage. You know, most of the retailers are looking at China plus one strategy, and PDS's large strength of manufacturing sourcing in various regions like Bangladesh, India, Turkey, Egypt. So a lot of that business migration from China is helping us to get the business into the geographies where we have a lot of strength. Plus, secondly, also, you know, we've identified and hired some very key resources in the U.S. who've got relationship with the large, most professional retailers in the U.S. like Walmart, Kohl's, Target, Haynes. So some of those management teams that joined us around 6 to 12 months back are showing great results. So the structural shift in business moving from China to a new region, plus the right team from PDS engaging with these people in the U.S. on their doorstep has caused that business to increase and will continue to grow in the years to come.
Okay, brilliant. A follow-up here. This makes a lot of sense, but my question, you know, on our drive in this China Plus One and the management team, is that are we winning market share from other sourcing companies? Or is it still the case where our major competition is the in-house sourcing teams of all of the clients that we serve? Could you tell me how much of the landscape is in-house and how much of it is currently outsourced?
I think, you know, most of the large retailers are setting up the offices earlier in China and Hong Kong. But, you know, for them to operate out of regions like Bangladesh and even, you know, Egypt and Turkey and some of the other markets like Sri Lanka, where we have large presence for U.S. business, it's strategically not in their intent. And also they do not culturally understand those markets as well as their past established relationship with China, which is going back 20, 25 years. So when they're looking at new geographies, they are trying to partner with the likes of PDS, and very few companies like that, like us, exist globally, because of which we are finding, you know, them coming to us and partnering with us to set up manufacturing and sourcing in these regions.
Okay. Has there been a large vacuum in the years after Lianfeng, you know, the various issues that they had faced in the last few years? Is there a large vacuum that we're seeing?
Yes. There's a large vacuum, you know, because the traditional sourcing companies globally were based out of Hong Kong, like Lianfeng, William Econner, New Prime, some of these. So culturally, they're very aligned to China and Vietnam region. But, you know, globally, other parts of the world, it's not easy for them to operate and, you know, also have the right relationship with the vendors and the management team to bring in the right people in other markets outside China and Vietnam. So there, PDS has emerged as one of the strongest players in the industry, which are partnering with the best retailers to you know, give them transparency and the right supply chain and working with them closely. So there's a big vacuum gap, you know, in the current landscape of companies still providing these services to these large retailers who are trying to migrate the business out of China because of China Plus One strategy, which is accelerating.
Our advantage is that we are present in these geographies that they aren't in at all.
Yeah, present in these geographies long time with deep established roots for many years. So that's definitely helping us. Plus, you know, we are also talking about strategic relationships. As Sanjay had mentioned, we started a new business stream in TDS called Sourcing as a Service. And that business stream basically acts as the retailer's own office in these geographies. So, you know, we signed with Hanes Brands around 6 months back now, and, you know, we started seeing great results. So there's a big migration of business happening from China into countries like Bangladesh, where we are open exclusive office for the retailer, and all the business of the retailer in that region will go through that office.
Am I correct in assuming that this helps them also in terms of compliance, that they have everything in one place?
Yeah. Yeah. So the reason these retailers want to partner with PDS, you know, because they believe that our governance standards on environmental, social, and also overall corporate governance is in line with the big retailers around the world. So if you see predominantly PDS customer base are the FTSE 100, S&P 500, DAX 30 retail businesses. So, you know, these companies have high governance standards, high compliance standards, and they trust that, you know, company like PDS, which is global in nature, has been established for many years, is, you know, professional player in the global fashion supply chain industry, is in line with, you know, what they would expect themselves as well. So they believe that if they are passing their supply chain through PDS, their brand risk reputation will be managed as well, if not better than them trying to do it themselves. So, you know, every retailer wants a financially stable partner who's strong in ESG. And honestly, very few companies with our global size and scale exist today, because of which, you know, we're getting huge traction. Another big retailer in the U.S. called Kohl's, you know, they wanted to set up a operation in Bangladesh to challenge the Infung operation. So PDS was chosen as a second partner. So very quickly, you know, our business, as soon as we had established this office, grew to more than $50-60 million, you know, within the span of less than a year, which is going to continue to grow in the next couple of years.
Okay, so we should be expecting more wins like this. I have one last question from my side. Mr. Palak, I've heard interviews of yours from the past where you spoke about how, you know, during periods of headwinds, particularly in 2008, for example, PDS emerged stronger, winning businesses from, you know, other companies that went bankrupt or lost market share. So even though we're seeing headwinds currently in, you know, possibly in the second half of 2022, is there any difference, or, you know, what strategies have we taken on now after our learnings over the last decade to capture more market share?
I think, you know, PDS is in a very unique position. So the consolidation happening in the industry is really benefiting us. And if you see already in our first Q1 results, you know, you've seen the big growth that has happened. So we see, you know, to a certain extent that trend continuing because of some of the large agency deals we are discussing with retailers on sourcing as a service. Plus also, you know, big traction on design-led sourcing business where a lot of small, medium-sized factories across Asia are struggling on working capital to finance the goods themselves. So, you know, retailers have the confidence. Company like PDS is on their doorstep, providing them design, providing them the service, and also, you know, partnering with the right factories in Asia, providing working capital to those factories. So this kind of, you know, unique formula is not existing in our industry overall. So for large retailers, you know, we are becoming a global solution, one-stop shop from design till delivery, and, you know, with full ESG compliance and governance and large working capital limits with, you know, large banks across Asia. And all that is leading to consolidation and growth from, you know, typically whenever recession happens, PDS ends up doubling in size in the next 2 to 3 years. This is what we saw in 2008 as a trend.
Okay. Thank you so much for taking my question. I'll get back in the queue.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Apurva Bahadur from Investec. Please go ahead.
Hey, hi, sir. Thank you for the opportunity and congratulations on a very strong set of numbers. So I wanted to understand, I think in last quarter when we spoke, you had highlighted that there would be margin headwinds, right, given the global commodity and exchange rate situation. What's your take now? Do you see the headwinds to continue in the current quarter, that's Q2, Q3 as well, or is the situation improving now?
So I think there are two things. One, yes, there were margin headwinds because of commodity price increase, especially in cotton, polyester, and obviously energy. But, you know, the key in our industry is about gaining market share and getting more important to the retail and becoming more aligned to their long-term strategy. When headwinds come, a lot of small, medium-sized companies are not able to handle the pressure and will fall by the wayside. But, you know, PDS being a company which is, you know, global in scale and size and also has the ability, financial ability to withstand short-term pressures, retailers recognize this very well. They know that if, you know, there's challenging times, a lot of other companies, a lot of other suppliers they're dealing with probably will not be able to sustain or, you know, even deliver the goods in these times. So our strategy was very clear. We should continue to align closer with the retailers, understand their pain points, and, you know, become closer and make sure that we're able to solve them. That is why we are seeing a big growth in the whole market share that we are gaining. On the other side, you know, commodity prices are cyclical. So we have already seen softening of a lot of commodity prices with some interest rate increasing. We've seen cotton prices reduce a lot and energy prices have also started slowly coming down. And also, you know, there's a big currency devaluation that has happened in a lot of the markets where we export from, for example, Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, even India. There's currency devaluation happening. So we feel that with increased market share and large turnover that we've gained, plus commodity prices and, you know, all these currency devaluations coming together, our margins will start improving in the second part of the year. The worst thing would have been that if we had lost business, you know, and let business go, which was clearly not the intent. So we gave clear instruction to all our companies. Please partner with the retailers, think long-term, bring in as much business as possible, and then, you know, this temporary phenomenon will go and we'll become much stronger with a much bigger order book, plus the ability to get back margin when things normalize.
Right, sir. I think you briefly touched upon the next question as well, which I had in mind, and that is on the demand situation for the end markets. So, yeah. Are you seeing any impact of these headwinds on demand, especially in Europe? I think because that's much more impacted due to the energy and commodity inflation.
So, I would answer this question in two ways. One is, you know, the U.S. retailers are normally buying on a longer cycle. They're buying almost goods 12 months in advance. So their forecasts were, you know, obviously done on the demand surge they've seen from COVID times. And because they had already placed large commitments 12 months in advance, they had to get out of those commitments and buy less for the next few months. Whereas on the European side, you know, retailers are used to buying on a four-month cycle. So they were able to adjust themselves and they didn't have too many cancellation and pushbacks like some of the large American retailers had to do globally because of the life cycle of product and order placement these people do differently. That is one point. Second point is also, you know, on the whole cycle of pricing, at the end of the day, we feel, you know, that we are in a strong position to withstand this pressure and, you know, work with the retailers and provide them the service that they need on this side.
Sir, you said that U.S. retailers typically plan 12 months in advance. I wanted to understand the structure of the contracts over here. Do we fix the prices at the beginning of the year, or is there any scope for renegotiation in case the commodity prices rise up?
So normally, you know, with the retailers, especially with the U.S., they are fixing the prices. But if there's a big adjustment in cotton, then, you know, the suppliers are normally going back like this time happened and getting upcharges as required. Most of the retailers are accommodating if there's a situation which is, you know, going to impact and is a one-off situation.
Fair enough. And we are not seeing any demand hit in Europe especially.
No, we are not seeing much demand hit. We are seeing a consolidation happening because of which, you know, retailers are trying to work closer with us. And it's a flight to safety. Whenever uncertain times happen, there's a flight to safety. That's helping us. Plus, secondly, also one of the important points is PDS customer base is a lot of the supermarkets and the discounters around Europe. So these guys, typically in a recession, people are trading down. And that helps us to even gain more market share and business from these retailers. The demand hit is mostly coming in the middle segment of the market and some online players. So luckily, our business with middle segment has not been there for the last many years. We focus on the discounts and the supermarkets, which are the large S&P 500, FTSE 100, DAX 30 companies. So, you know, typically in a recession, people trade down and the discounter sales improve. And that definitely has a positive impact on PDS overall.
This is very insightful. You briefly touched upon again on our customers being largely departmental stores. So would you like to share the ASP of our apparel that we source, typical average selling price?
I think our typical average selling price is around $5, between $4.5 to $5.
This is
woven garments is obviously, yeah, FOB. Woven garments is much higher. Jersey garments is much lower. But also, you know, we do a lot of baby wear commodity. We do socks. You know, we are a multi-product company. So I think average selling price across categories would be different. So, you know, we do jackets and outerwear, which could be $25-$30. We do knitwear, which is $10 to $15. And, you know, woven bottoms will be $8 to $9. But a lot of jerseys sub $3. And baby bodysuit, nice suit will be $1.50 kind of pricing. So it's spread across the board, you know.
Okay.
Between $4 to $5 will be the average, yeah.
No, I think this is great. So just one last question, if I may. And this is I think you have touched upon the contribution of new business to top line. I missed a number. I think it was 141 crore now versus, if I'm not wrong, 39 crore earlier.
Yeah, hi, this is Sanjay here. It was 141 crore in first quarter this year versus 23 crores in the corresponding quarter of last year. It's actually grown nearly 6 times in terms of sales volume in rupees crores.
That's good. And so what was the contribution from our new businesses of Hanes and S. Oliver?
Well, Hanes is beginning to contribute from this quarter. So as of now, it is not a very significant contribution. I think as quarter two, quarter three unfolds, we should get more. But I think the important thing here is for Hanes, it is a service charge that we are recovering. While on my sourcing, design is a service business. We get to book the entire FOB sales with an average 15% to 16% gross margin. In this business, we would be getting a service charge. And S. Oliver, wherein the first year volume was expected at 30 million and due to the journey of 60 that we had foreseen in 3 years, we had logged in a run rate of 10 million as of now in the last 4 months. So we are on track to do a billing of $30 million in this entire year. The first, last 4 months, because when we signed the contract, it actually became active from February end of 2022. So we have clocked in about $10 million of sales on S. Oliver.
Great, sir. Thanks a lot. I'll get back in the queue if I have more queries. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Dhruv Bheda from Jayaram Stockbrokers. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking my question. Can you just throw some light on what kind of arrangement does Poetic Brand have with Forever 21 and how will it affect or how will it benefit PDS as a whole and what are the risks associated with this partnership?
Sanjay, you want to take it or?
Yeah, you please go ahead, Palak.
Yeah. So basically, Forever 21, you know, there's a master licensee in US with Authentic Brand Group, and they were searching for a partner for continental Europe and UK. So PDS has become that one of our subsidiaries, Poetic Brands, has become a master franchise license holder for Forever 21. So our strategy was some online sales, but predominantly selling through our wholesale channel, which is going to be 90% pre-sold with the large retailers we work with. So we've basically got the brand in hand and then we talked to some of our large retail partners and looked at their appetite that if PDS subsidiary was holding this brand, what would be their interest to buy goods from us under that label for them. So looking at the whole positive feedback, we decided to take the brand agency for Europe and UK. So we see very low downside risk because, you know, we are not taking much inventory risk. But on the other side, you know, with these key retail partners where we are already sourcing private label products, we'll be also offering them a branded service where our gross margin will be much higher. So hope
okay. And can you just throw some light on the risks and what kind of revenue are you expecting in this segment? Specifically with Forever 21 over the period of, say, 4 to 5 years?
So
if possible, you can just throw in a number.
So there will be two risks in this business. One is inventory risk, which, as I said, we are not going to be taking. Very minimal sales selling through online. Predominantly will be through pre-sold wholesale channel. And the second risk is minimum royalty that we have to pay to Forever 21 master holder in the US of around $2 million over 5 years.
So it's quite a small royalty considering the grand scheme of things, plus the back-to-back almost kind of commitments we have from all our retail partners. So at the end of the day, I would say the risk is quite limited. It's no large minimum royalty guarantees, plus we're not carrying any inventory at this stage. And the revenue potential, obviously, you know, the royalty is around 2 million, is around 10% in this kind of deal. So we need to do $20 million sales over 5 years, annualized, aggregated over 5 years, $20 million sales to pay the minimum royalty. But we are expecting to double or triple of that.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vineet Jain, an individual investor. Please go ahead. Vineet, we are not able to hear you.
Hi, I hope I'm audible.
Yes, sir. Please proceed.
Yeah. So mine's more a request than a question, actually. And then the management has been very generous with answering all the questions and sharing a lot of details about the business so far. I wanted to request if it would be possible for you guys to share some more granular information on in the important subsidiaries, maybe the top 8 or 10 in terms of contributions to top line. Because when we look at the performance of the different subsidiaries, there seems to be wide variation, and some of them have, you know, gross margins as high as 40-45%, whereas there are others in single digits. So if it would be possible for the management to share some broad matrices on important subsidiaries, maybe the top 30 or 40% in terms of contribution to top line on a quarterly basis, that would be wonderful.
Sure, Vineet. This is Sanjay here. I think point well taken. We will, on a half-yearly basis, try and facilitate for our investors a further insight into the top 10 verticals of PDS. At this stage, to answer your question, if I answer in USD million, we had a top line of 1184, around $1.2 billion last year. Our top 10 verticals contributed to 76% of the top line and almost the entire PBT. When I say it is reported PBT, which means there were smaller businesses whose profit and my investment that went into new businesses got neutralized. But net-net, 76% of the top line of the company came in from our top 10 verticals like Poetic Gem, Design Arc, Simple Approach, Techno, Norlanka, to name a few. But I've noted your data request, and we will facilitate on a 6-monthly basis a further insight into our top 10 verticals in terms of sales and in terms of the contribution to the overall profit of the company as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Chirag Jain, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hello. Am I audible?
Yes, sir.
So, firstly, I had some question on the venture capital investments that we do. So, firstly, do we have a dedicated team for which venture capital investments that we do?
The answer is yes. We do have a dedicated team who has got no allocation of resource for the day-to-day operations, full dedicated resource. The answer is yes. We have
a team. Also, further on that, so what parameters or industry do we have in mind while investing in the venture capital investments that we do?
I'm going to request Palak to take that.
Sure. So basically, you know, today's day and age, any industry, any business to succeed, you have to be in the ecosystem, right? So one, you have to be a platform, which PDS already is a platform, because of which we can onboard so many businesses. Second, you have to be in the ecosystem of all the innovation disruption happening. So PDS Ventures was set up 5 years ago with the view that we work with, you know, the top universities around the world like Harvard, Stanford, MIT, Cambridge, Oxford, and some of the leading universities in India and other parts of Asia. And we see what are the innovation coming out of there. And our entire focus is around retail tech, fashion tech, some direct-to-consumer brands who are sustainability, you know, sustainability focused, and business around sustainability and circularity in fashion and new raw material research. So businesses coming with these top universities, you know, we are normally investing with them at a seed stage, but we are partnering with retailers who we feel will back these ventures and other global tier one VCs. So that's how, you know, we are basically going as a strategic investor in these five fields with businesses coming from some of the top universities around the world. And this is a big reason why we see, you know, a lot of the big retailers wanting to further partner their business with PDS, because a typical vendor today is struggling to survive, struggling to, you know, take care of even supplying the goods. Whereas company like PDS, you know, global in nature, having large working capital limits with the top banks, having a very strong ESG focus, plus a venture arm feeding in innovation and newness is, you know, a lot of sticking points for a retailer to migrate business and work with us rather than a factory in middle of Asia somewhere or a small sourcing company maybe in you know, which is single location.
Okay, so I understand that. So is it be possible for you to give some kind of color that we investment that we do, because we have always, or you have already given a guidance of 6 to 7% of capital employed being invested into that. So if you can give a brief about it in the presentations provided by you, it will be much better. It's a request on my side.
Sure. Also,
can you provide some update on Sri Lankan exposure that we had?
So yes, on the venture we can provide, we have internal presentation that we pitch to our customers all the time. So we can share that with the investor community at the right time if it's allowed, you know, as per SEBI. Second thing is on the whole Sri Lankan exposure. I think, you know, overall it's a very sad situation for the country. But, you know, fortunately for a group like PDS, where most of our banking is run out of Hong Kong and part of it from Dubai, it's actually become an advantage because, you know, at the end of the day, most of the factories in Sri Lanka banking with local banks are having a very difficult time opening raw material LCs to import goods from China, India and other parts of the world because the banking is in big crisis. But the big, you know, with PDS kind of business, most of our banking, 95% or plus, is running out of Hong Kong. So the retailers are seeing it as a great advantage that if they're migrating business to PDS for Sri Lanka manufacturing, raw materials are being able to pay on time and goods delivered from Sri Lanka on time. Secondly, a lot of small, medium-sized factories are now coming to PDS and saying, can you please take over our capacities? They're not able to, you know, work directly with the retailers because of our financial constraints. And can Nor Lanka, which is the PDS subsidiary in Sri Lanka, finance the business and, you know, take on the order book and even work together with us to manage that supply? So we are actually going to budget a growth in Sri Lanka this year compared to a last year budget.
Got that. Can I squeeze in one, if I may? So I had last question was on my supply chain issues. So do we see resolving them by this quarter or this year financial end? So what's the update?
I think a lot of it depends on macroeconomic challenges, you know, that we are seeing. But I mean, it's difficult to judge. But if any company, you know, globally is in a position to manage those supply chain challenges, PDS is probably the best placed.
Sure. Thanks. That's from the side. I'll join the queue.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Shirish Pardesi from Centrum Broking. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, Palak. Thanks for the opportunity. Good evening, Sanjayji. I have three questions. The first question is that you mentioned that you have a very strong order book for sourcing business. If you can give some color, what is it that and how long it is going to be serviced?
Yeah, Palak, let me take one. I think we had, Shirish, in the beginning of the year, had foreseen a 12 to 15% sales growth as a guidance for the entire year. And this was basis our engagement with the customers. Basis our actions, basis our active engagement, as Palak answered as part of one of the questions in terms of active engagement, we managed to grow 44%. We believe the overall number that we have foreseen, our quarter two, quarter three is well poised. This is the orders in hand and engagement with the customer with a strong upside, you know, to the growth traction. Typically from our sourcing business, at this stage of the year, when we talk about, which is in say August early, we would have 80 to 90% plus of the entire year budgets of all our verticals, you know, having totally booked. So therefore, the order book is strong. We are feeling very, very confident to maintain and meet our overall guidance for the entire year. Notwithstanding the 44% growth, I'm still a little bit cautious because of the overall geopolitical situations. Order book in hand, our engagement, we are well placed. And for our factories, which typically are about 6 to 7% of top line, we are for quarter two 100% booked in terms of capacity. And quarter three, we already have firm orders upwards of 75%. And in about a month's time, we should be able to lock in the quarter 300% as well. So we are in good shape for now in terms of order book and engagement with the customers.
That's really helpful, Sanjay. Just one follow-up. This order book, what we are having, is enough that we can supply within our factories, or we'll have to go outside?
See, when I mentioned about the factory order book, then I'm talking about two Bangladesh factories of ours.
Okay.
Which contribute to 6-7% top line, and we are very cautious that we don't overbook. So therefore, our endeavors to take orders that we can service from our factory green in progress. For the sourcing business order book that I mentioned, that we would be serving to our 600 plus vendor network across the globe, and as we have clarified earlier in the previous conversations, every vendor that is onboarded is through a rigorous process, and it is also with an approval, prior approval of the customer to whom we would be supplying within the factory. So there's a robust process. So pre-approved by the customer and selected through a rigorous process is the vendor base that we will be using to service our sourcing vertical customers.
Okay, that's really helpful. Sanjay, my second question is on two brands, Lily and Sid, we have introduced in India through Reliance Marketplace. And the other one is Turtle Dove London, which we have partnered with First Cry. Any update, any color, how it's panning out, what is the thing, whether the revenues have started coming, contributed to the top line?
Yeah, I think it got good traction because of the nature of the product that we have. But as Palak mentioned, we continue to be careful about the risks we take. So we are carefully watching, in terms of the order inflow and wanting to stay away from locking in too much of inventory. From a low sale perspective, last year, as it is a new offering, our sales are actually multiplying 4 times. This year, we had sold less than 500,000. And we are seeing a 2 million annualized volume coming in from our effort of sales in India, but cautiously taking it ahead. From 0.5 to 2, we are well poised, but the caution continues to minimize the inventory risk as we take it ahead.
Okay. Sanjay, my last question is on, sometime back, we were trying to set up our office in Vietnam, and we said that Vietnam is going to be strategic. So, is the plan has gone as per the process, or we have taken a stop there?
I'm going to request Palak. I have the benefit of his presence today, since it's more related to strategy. Palak, would you like to please address that?
So Vietnam overall business is progressing in the right direction. We are seeing a lot of traction again because of China Plus One sourcing strategy of big retailers. They are looking at Vietnam as established market. PDS to a certain extent is a bit late in the game in Vietnam because, we just came there and that market has been established for the last 4, 5, 7 years, or I think probably close to 7, 8 years business from China was starting to migrate. But, whichever customers we are offering Vietnam, especially the European retailers, they are finding it as an attractive proposition and wanting to work with us out of there.
Wonderful. Thank you and all the best to you and the team.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Riken Gopani from Capri Global. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I have two questions. Firstly, on the overall business forecast that you've shared in the presentation, you do expect the manufacturing segment also to sort of grow faster than the overall company. So I wanted to understand what are the strategic plans for the manufacturing operations and what kind of outlay are we expecting over the next 3 to 4 years in this segment, and which geographies will be sort of, will it be focused on India itself, or what are the plans on the manufacturing segment? Yeah.
You want to take this or?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'll take it, Palak. So I think before I specifically answer your question, the larger strategic intent that we have shared with you is to double our size from $1.2 billion to $2.5 billion over 4 to 5 years. And as we travel this path, the manufacturing contribution to our sales would be circa about 8% or so. So from, if I just analyze what we have been achieving, we are looking at about $100 million, $90 to $100 million top line coming in from our manufacturing this year. And in about 4 to 5 years, we look at $200 million plus coming in from our manufacturing operations. While there is always a juice of 25% to 30%, which means from a $90 million to $100 million this year, we can extract 25, 30, so capital efficiency. But there is a $70 million to $80 million that we believe would require to be generated through our incremental investment in the capacity. That is number one. Having identified this strategic gap or the need to fulfill, our focus right now is to make sure that the profitability we have achieved in our operations is well entrenched. And number two, we derive more efficiency. We do have space, land parcel adjoining to one of our factory for the top, which has been named Green internally. We have a land parcel adjacent to it. There is scope to expand. We are adding a wash plant to our Progress factory as well. So there is going to be incremental investment to get beyond capital efficiency. And I think India is emerging as an attractive country given the mega textile park, given the PLI scheme that has been launched, and especially as we are learning about an active dialogue our government is having with developers for restoration of FTAs that India has been enjoying. And with China Plus One, on one hand, India's own manufacturing attractiveness, FTAs and China Plus One, India is emerging as a country wherein PDS is actively evaluating that for the extra $70 to $80 million beyond our existing capacities that we need to generate from manufacturing. I think India is an attractive country. Now, the capital outlay, we believe our internal accruals that we have, given our balance sheet is very comfortable with the overall net debt to EBITDA leverage of 0.3, we believe our accruals, our balance sheet imparts sufficient accruals for us to fund this.
Right, that is very clear. Thank you for the detailed answer. Secondly, on the design-led sourcing part of the business, that also you expect a reasonably strong growth over the next 5-year vision plan. Is it going to be primarily driven by acquiring market share from the existing clients, or will there be new categories? If you can broadly help us understand, how do you expect to achieve this growth over the next 5 years in the sourcing business?
I'm requesting Mr. Seth to answer. Palak, would you please take it?
Sure. I think it's going to be a combination of existing customers consolidating and giving us more of their business because a lot of the design-led sourcing business is done from domestic companies in markets like U.K., Germany, U.S. And many of those small, medium-sized companies are struggling to survive. So we are going to get more market share from them on those bases. So I think that's the reason of the major consolidation happening in this segment. Did I answer your question?
Also, just to add to that, will there be, you entering into other categories as well, which will drive this growth, let's say, from apparel to non-apparel categories, or this will primarily be focused or achieved from apparel as a category? Hello?
Yes, Palak, we can hear you.
Am I audible, sir?
Yeah.
Hello.
I had a follow-up, which was if you can highlight if it will be achieved primarily from apparel, or will there be a new category additions that will also drive this growth?
So allow me to take this one. I think the connection with Palak's line in UK seemed to have some disturbance. So our larger focus would continue to be apparel, but we are augmenting our offerings with home as a category. This is one of the, when we talk about new vertical investments, home is a category that we are focused on and it is gaining traction. Then accessories is another category that we are focusing on as part of new verticals. So these won't be larger share of our offerings. They would at best be about, it will be sub 10%. So we would largely be apparel focused. And while we continue to strengthen our position in the existing markets where we operate with our existing retail customers, plus offering them new, services through new vertical of sourcing as a service. But we are also, coming across interesting opportunities of providing strategic capital to companies which are in the sourcing business of the size of $40 to $50 million in markets where we haven't operated. So as you know, our model is join hands with an entrepreneur who've got requisite category or industry experience, and then provide strategic capital for growth. We've also been now spotting some similar opportunities in markets where we don't hitherto have not been operating. So that also would be something that we are going to actively pursue. And we believe while answering the first part, about 8 to 10% of our five-year evolution of top line might come in from new offerings. These new geographies, for example, Australia, we started our efforts 1 year back and it's a small number, but we have multiplied our sales to Australia, 5 to 6 times over the corresponding quarter last year. We believe new geographies, have potential to contribute another 4 to 5% of our top line.
Understood, sir. Thank you so much. Just one clarification. If you could basically help us understand the seasonality. If Q1 typically a seasonally weak quarter, and what's this kind of seasonality that you typically see across the quarters? If you could help us understand.
Yeah, I think typically the second half of the year, as we say, the winter collection, and then the spring collections for the Feb March month. Is always stronger, more stronger traction. On an average, you can say 55-60% of what we aim to do annualized basis would actually come in from the second half of the year. So what we sold was summer collection, what we'll sell is the fall collection, but then we would be, when we get into winter and spring, summer, then the sales are typically 55-60% of the entire year as compared to 40-45% in the first half of the year.
Like Q4 is the strongest. So
yes, that's been historically the case. Yeah. That in fact, in a normalized PBT as part of an investor release, we have tried to compare ourselves sequentially with quarter four, but then the higher sales lead to further operating efficiency in Q4.
Understood, sir. Thank you so much for the answers. That's all from us. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Krunal Shah from Enam Investments. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello. Thank you for the opportunity.
Sorry to interrupt, Krunal. We are not able to hear you.
Better now?
Yes. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi. Thank you for the opportunity. Two questions. First one is on the PDS Venture Tech segment. So if you see segmental for the quarter, we had a 5 crore loss. Could you explain the reason for the same?
Actually, when we talk about the third segment, sourcing, manufacturing and others, then it actually has three pieces. Just broadly speaking, one third is real estate from which we monetized last year with a profit of 5.5. And that's where I mentioned our effort is continuing to further monetize that one third piece. The second one third is actually the venture tech investment, which Palak explained the strategic rationale as part of the previous question. It is the last one-third, which is our treasury investments. It is not per se liquid, which is kind of a little medium to long-term investments they are in bonds, they are in equity as part of a treasury portfolio. And it is there in that segment that on a mark-to-market basis, given the interest rates have gone up, therefore MTM of the bonds come down, or otherwise because of the investment in some cases being held in GBP or Hong Kong currency, that we have approximately 600,000 of MTM loss, which if the currency and the interest rates improve, if you hold to maturity, should go away. But there is also close to a 200,000 realized loss, wherein we locked in, whatever was the realizable value. So it's largely the notional loss of about, if a net of 600,000 out of the two, in this one-third segment of the others that got reported. That's the nature, that's the answer to your question.
Got it, thanks. And second question is regarding, currency. As you mentioned that there's been a lot of volatility in the currency market. Even euro and pound has, if you see versus the rupee and versus the dollar, they're appreciated. So how do we manage this kind of situation? Because a lot of our exposure is again in euro and pound.
I think allow me to answer that. Let's break up P&L in two parts. Anything with respect to sales and the cost of goods sold is largely US dollar denominated, barring our operations in Turkey, which are of the size of 50 to 60 million GBP, wherein the currency of reporting is GBP, the rest is almost US dollar. So to that extent, we have a natural hedge, number one. In fact, our top line has grown 44% this year, but if I talk about dollar to dollar growth in the top line, it has actually grown 37%. So the company has benefited with the dollar strengthening against rupee in terms of growth becoming 44. That is number one. Now if I go below COGS, then we do have OPEX payments. For example, in UK operations, the salary and some admin related payments are in GBP. We tend to take a hedge, basis the available instrument and board approved risk management policy. But that's a small portion of the OPEX, which is only UK centric. But when I talk about OPEX in Bangladesh, in Sri Lanka, in India, then they are typically denominated in Bangladeshi taka or Sri Lankan or Indian rupee. There, since our earnings are in dollars, the local currency depreciation is actually helpful to our case. So on the whole, barring this instance of a translation exposure on the investment that are held through balance sheet, which I answered as part of your initial question, and some OPEX that are in GBP, or a 50, 60 million top line in GBP in Turkey, we are largely having a natural hedge and our principal currency is US dollars.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Chinmaya Bhargava from LSSP Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for being generous enough to take another question from me. So this is actually a follow-up to a request Vineet had made earlier in the call about the subsidiaries. And I just wanted to ask, if I look at the business sustainability report that we had put out for 2022, we highlighted, the 10 subsidiaries that made up 70% of our pie, and also spoke about some that we expect to focus on in the next couple of years. So like a J-Craft Array or a Styleberry. I wanted to ask you if you can just share a little bit of details about, these businesses, because not a lot of information is available to better understand what they do. Thank you.
Yeah, I think, as I said in response to one of the previous similar questions, the top 10 verticals, when I say verticals, these verticals might be conducting business in more than 10 legal entities, which we will facilitate as part of the next quarter release. But more importantly, top 10 businesses are contributing 76. But the new verticals that we mentioned, about 18 new verticals that we are currently operating, they are in the remaining ones. Then there are some businesses which are in the size of 10 million, 15 million, 5 million as well. So they are in a growth phase. Well, the ones which are 5 year plus typically are in the top 10. But the ones which were started 3-4 years back are running about $10-20 million. It is the remaining ones, and wherein, of course, we through our internal performance review processes as part of the original budgets and then the performance reviews, we gradually keep supporting them to get to a 4-5% PBT of the top line as a sourcing business. So that's how that's the answer I can give you. But I think at the same time, we will for sure endeavor to try and get you a more smarter way of getting a clarity about top 10 contribution to top line and PBT, and how many legal entities are engaged in top 10, and then beyond top 10, which are the next ones. And then the third category is the new verticals. We will endeavor to get this clarity to our stakeholders as part of the next quarter release. But I hope I've answered your question, but otherwise I can clarify more at this stage.
No, thanks so much. I've actually seen that a lot of the newer ventures have PBT margins of higher than the 4% that we've set. So I'm happy. I just would like more granular details on the next thing. So that's all from my side, and all the best.
Sure. I think when I answered, I am answering on an average about 4-5%. But of course, there can be some outlier exceptions wherein the margins are higher. But we would endeavor to clarify more, rather not clarification, rather include data as part of the next quarter release.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as there are no further questions, I now hand the conference over to Mr. Sandeep Kumar Agarwal for his closing comments. Mr. Agarwal,
I think let me take this. Sanjay Jain here. I guess there is some connectivity issue some of us are facing, including Palak from London. So on behalf of Palak, Sandeep from Edelweiss, thank you everyone for joining us today. It was a pleasure to have an engaging audience like you and taking the time to join us. And we look forward to connecting with you again after the next quarter earnings release. Thank you, everyone, and stay safe.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Edelweiss Securities, that concludes this conference call. We thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.